And this has to do with the light cone. It's kind of amazing. So you're falling in. Light's coming in. It's all being, remember that cone that you said, that those two right angle things that you saw on the diagram yesterday? Consider rotating that into a cone. And nothing can come from over there. So you're seeing everything coming in, bending in. So this is your perspective. So you're seeing, actually you're seeing stuff behind you come in this way. And so as you get further into the well, right? You get everything stretching further, so the cone becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. And it looks, for you, you just see the most boring thing looking. But it's not boring, I think it's kind of cool. It looks like the whole universe collapsed to another point if you're looking behind. Now, I've got a couple of pictures that was actually done for us, and I want to thank Jute Gras for doing this. Three different images, looking forward, looking sideways, looking backwards. And these are static images. So, and he's done radius as your 100 Schwarzschild radius is away. Kind of get the idea. So you're looking forward, right? And here's our galaxy, Milky Way galaxy, right? There's something happening. There's some sort of distortion happening there. This lensing that we were talking about yesterday. Looking sideways, not too exciting. You see the image. Looking backwards, just a nice image of the you see behind you. Let's move us out. Right? Forward, now we're looking forward to get a cool look. So everybody's at the front of the ship looking forward. Right? They're seeing more distortions, they're seeing this black hole up here. That's a great name. Sideways, nothing too much. Backwards, the same guy, so they're all in front. A lot of people are still at the front, seeing the hole get bigger and bigger and bigger, but they're getting bored because people are now looking at the side window. You start to see some sort of distortion happening. The fat guy, in the back window, same wall, same wall. The forward guy, I see nothing now. Right? And we're still outside the Schwarzschild radius. But the sideways guys are seeing a bit of nothing. And the fat guys see the same wall again. 1.5, look where we are at. 1.5. There we go. Perfect. Nice little horizon. Maybe something in the back, but you're not quite sure. People are convincing themselves. And that's. So you can see how they all kind of go together, right? So you can see the difference. So let's summarize the anatomy. Singularity, horizon, photon sphere, 1.5 times. It all comes from the Schwarzschild solution, and this is the simplest type of a black hole. Just remember, a black hole has the same mass, a two solar mass black hole has the same mass as a two solar mass. Our sun, if it was a black hole, would have the same mass as a black hole. If I don't like that and turned our sun into a black hole, which it cannot occur, we would not know about it until about 8 minutes, and then what would you notice? No more light. That was it. The Earth is still staying in orbit. The mass stays the same. The dynamics stay the same. It's just all of a sudden not light anymore. Eventually you would die. Because black holes. Types of black holes. You can charge a black hole. That means you can actually make a charge more positive or more negative. And if you do that, the charge is creating another horizon. Now you have two horizons, an inner horizon and an outer horizon. The more charge you give it, the closer the two horizons actually come closer and closer and closer. And you don't want to give so much charge, but you need all the charge in the universe to do it. But if you could do that, the two horizons would touch. You would get what we call a naked singularity and a lot of energy. It's a lot of energy part that I'm worried about all the energy in the universe to put them together, and it has to be released. So there's that one of those Penrose diagram things, but I guess I don't want to talk about that. This is a cool one. Rotating black hole, sometimes called a pure black hole. Look what we got here. We get two photon spheres. Because it's rotating, we have something called frame draft. Some interesting stuff. So it's rotating. So not only do we get one photon sphere, we get two photon spheres. An innie and an outie. We then get a zone called the ergosphere, which has got something which we call a static limit, and then we got an outer horizon. And then we have an inner horizon. We not only do we have one horizon, but two photon spheres, we have two horizons. We have an inner horizon and an outer horizon. And our singularity, I'll use this, but it's hard to see. My next slide has a better picture. Let's see if I got one. Yeah. This one's got a better picture. My singularity is a donut. It's a torus, mathematically a torus. It's a donut. Donut of a hole. Right? You've got two photon spheres. You've got this egg-shaped thing, which we call this the static limit, and we call this the outer horizon right there. And then you have an inner horizon right there, and then we have a singularity. So inner, outer, and this place here is called the ergosphere. This is the frame. Nothing can stay still in the ergosphere. Everything has to move. Itself is rotating, and we do not. You don't have enough power, don't have enough speed to get yourself to stand still. Right? Not even light photons. Photons could stand still. Don't have enough energy to not stand still because it's going in the opposite direction where it was traveling. Okay. But because now the geometry here is not the Schwarzschild geometry; it's a totally different set of geometry. And because of the geometry, the singularity now is toroidal in shape. Remember I said when you cross the event horizon, the first event horizon, time and space properties kind of switch around? Because you crossed another event horizon, guess what they've done again?
Came back.
Right? Before, you had no choice. It's one horizon, they're going to the singularity. Now, you have to really work hard to get to the singularity. This is where they can have fun with wormholes. Going through the hole, playing with it. This is yesterday's talk. We had this negative energy. I like calling it exotic matter, and I'll talk about that in a sec. A lot more fun with these things, a lot more complex mathematically. So, Kerr-Newman is a spinning black hole with charge, looks basically the same, but now it just has charge. Remember I mentioned yesterday that a black hole has no hair? All that means is whatever goes in, if you're inside and it was all crushed back in, you couldn't go backwards and determine what it was. Now, so this is what Wheeler had done. It was black hole has no hair. I really think it has three hairs, right? Mass, angular momentum, and electric charge. I think those are the three hairs that we get. Those are three pieces of information that you can say. Is it spinning? Is it charged? And how big is it? Between those three pieces of information, you can determine the type of black hole. But it's basically saying, if a star, whatever went in, if the star was the shape of a cube, a sphere, or something unusual, it all becomes the same thing inside a black hole. It becomes one and part of the singularity. The Zen of black hole dynamics. So let's review. Types of black holes, Schwarzschild produces first equation, which is just based on mass. This is the physical version. Okay, the Reisner-Nordström version came a bit later. We now have electric charge added to my black hole, and in doing so, we created another event horizon. Then used the solution. And you think about the 60s, well, some of us were around in the 60s, right? It's not too long ago before somebody could actually figure out the solution to Einstein's equation that just had a bit of a spin. And then a couple years later, they combined those two to come up with spin and electric charge. Some of these things are all in the actually everybody's busy scribbling away and stuff like that. This is some of the recent stuff, right? Some of you are working on this. I'm not going to spend too much because I know that some of you are going to do a presentation. Am I right? Some of you are talking about this?
Yeah.
So I'm going to go over this very quickly. Yes, Hawking was able to produce some statements about entropy in a black hole, and with that, he was able to talk about black holes radiating. So again, these guys are going to talk about this in more detail. I just want to show you a picture to make sure it makes sense for you. me just go through it. I think I have one better picture here because I just want to talk about it. Let's start with the black holes. According to general relativity, English, black holes do not radiate anything. But a quantum mechanical aspect, because there's a violation of the laws that are taking place. And we don't let violation of laws. How can some object violate the laws? So what Stephen Hawking basically said, based on yesterday's talk, if you have, in the world of quantum, you have these virtual, you basically have matter and antimatter, positron and electron, created, they separate, they join back together again, and long as you do it within a certain time, nothing's violated. You've got a little window of time they can do it. If you do it in that time, everything is cool. Right? And if, and because they are created and join themselves back, they're virtually not really real yet. Now, what would happen if one of them was created just outside the event horizon? So they're created outside the event horizon, and the tidal forces separate. So one of them falls inside. If it's inside, guess what it can't do? Get out. And the other one, because it's already out and it borrowed energy from the black hole to pull themselves apart, it says, where's my partner? Where's my partner? It's gone. I'm real. I'm a real particle now, not the ghost, right? Basically, in front of science, that is what happened. The poor dude going in says, oh my goodness.
You know who just said you can't have violations of laws?
Yes.
When you were talking yesterday about how Einstein kept putting his cosmological constant because he thought that the laws were right and that he was wrong, how do we know that the laws aren't wrong here?
We don't. The quantum physicists do this, trying to sit there and say, well, is Baker law with thermodynamics, right? The entropy effect. There's lots of information that's going to happen here. How can I come up with an explanation that allows a black hole not to violate this? This is an explanation. String guys, which I have one over here, coming up, this is just a test, but you guys can talk about that later on, right? String guys have their explanation of how it doesn't violate. So they have little strings, right, sitting on a D brain, D pi brain, coming in and colliding and popping out another string, and that's how they explain this non-violation, this radiation. And the radiation that you see coming from a black hole is one quarter. The wavelength is one quarter of the circumference of a black hole. That means a big black hole will radiate basically not a very energetic particle. So it won't glow in this beautiful, glowing, bright light that some people show it. It'd be releasing energy in the length of an order of radio waves. The smaller the black hole, the shorter the wavelength, then we start seeing. So a really small black hole, very, very tiny, 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 tiny black hole, dropping sizes of molecular size would really very quickly and then release a lot of energy. Right? So now it takes a long time. One of the equations I showed you, which is on the sheet, says that for a black hole to radiate all its energy away would take longer than the age of the universe. Right. Are black holes real? So we've got about 20 minutes. Remember, mathematically, we've got the ideas. That kind of makes you play with all this stuff. First thing that started to occur was people started looking for black holes. But you can't see the black holes because they're in their own nature, they're not visible. So what they do is they look at how an object whose mass is bigger than three solar masses, right? Now that's the limit. How it affects anything around it. So if we see things falling in, if we see objects orbiting other objects which we cannot see, then maybe we've got something that could be a candidate for a black hole. Okay, let's have a look. Get a little mouse going here. Look, there it is. So here's a mathematical simulation of something falling in. See how it's getting better? No energy. Some of this modeling, it took some poor programs, some poor computer a long time. These guys should be. That the horizon over there is coming out, right? This is what we're looking for. We're looking for things falling in. We're looking for particles even here, bouncing off each other, releasing energy. In fact, energy we expect is in the X-ray. So we're looking for a great X-ray source. Because if I was falling into a black hole or an older black hole, I'd be yellow X-rays too, right? You just don't want to go inside there. First verifiable black hole was actually discovered and worked with a person from the University of Toronto. It was Cygnus X1. It ended up seeing, it had a star orbiting, it's about 10 solar masses. It was orbiting another star, which they could see, releasing X-rays. That's what the X stands for. X stands for X-rays. First means the first X-ray source they found in the constellation of Cygnus. And it was actually something orbiting in a binary star system. So the two of them were orbiting together, releasing huge amount of X-rays above 300 solar masses, but every optical telescope couldn't see anything there. And it's only in the order of about 6,000 light years, which our telescope should be able to pull out in a white dwarf or any sort of star. We should be able to see it. We have the technology to see that. All we could see was X-rays coming from that. Here's some interesting shadow images. So this is a computer simulation there, in this corner. Zoom in. And that's what the computer simulation. This is actual images coming into NGC 6240. And you can see those two things, and they just match the images up. The modeling predicted exactly what the telescopes were seeing. So these two images are in fact identical, but you saw the prior to that, the fuzzy things. This is what's making them feel warm and fuzzy. If black holes and M's exist, we should see things like gravitational lensing. I tossed this thing in because we was talked about yesterday, but this may give you a better idea of what's happening with lensing. So as the light goes around the lens, it distorts. And if distorts, you should see these incredible arcs. And right? So you see these arcs right here? I'm going to use this. These arcs are caused by a large gravitational mass between us and another object. And so we can see multiple images of different galaxies and stars. And sometimes, if the geometry is perfect, we'll get what we call an Einstein ring. That means a perfect cluster. What else should we look for? Jets. Jets.
Some people like that, some people don't.
We don't know much about jets, or just becoming very, and then now we're laughing. Jets are becoming very important. It's only in the last 5 to 7 years that we're really understanding these things. We're seeing them. We're trying to explain where they come from. Right. So again, black hole stuff orbiting, which is called the accretion disk, and it should radiate. Mathematical models say that, hey, yes, it should radiate. We're not sure. There's about 3 or 4 good theories that try to explain how the jets come along. How does stuff come from the event horizon if nothing can get out of the event horizon? Is it just coming from? Is it just on the surface off? Is it just another zone around it? We're not sure. We're seeing a lot of pictures of these jets. So let's look at some pictures just to kind of show you. This is the best, one of the best latest images, right, of using a variety of different telescopes, different frequencies to put it together. This is an incredible picture. Okay, you can see, sometimes you see one because we can only see it, it's coming towards it. If it's going away from us, we don't see it, right? Unless we're at an angle where we're seeing it, the light bounce off the jets this way and hitting that telescope. Cause of galaxy, yes.
Can you go back?
Yeah.
That incredible picture you were talking about. Why are the X-rays at the top? Why are they cut off?
Which one? Why are they? This one here?
No, the bottom one.
This one.
Yeah.
Why are they cut off?
The X-rays, they're coming in from the top.
Well, no, these are the jets. We're seeing, this is multiple, this is not only an X-ray, this is a whole bunch of different things you put together.
Okay.
Right? To emphasize, because certain things see things better in X-rays than visible light, so they combine all these things to produce this image. Right? A good model, a good theory was, do black holes exist in cores of galaxies? And I'm going to just let this thing run. This is and I'm going to tie this into another image. So this is, we're zooming into our galactic core here. We're using our different telescopes, looking in to an area called Sagittarius A, using different telescopes, and we're just pulling in. So we're looking deep into our core, right? Sagittarius A. Then we started trying to take pictures. So this animation is supposed to not be seen. We then take these pictures, because we know there's a black hole there. We're seeing this X-ray coming out. Then we take pictures of a variety of years, same area, and then we put it together by tracking what's happening. And when we do that, we resolve all these strange objects, and then we look at how these objects are moving. Some of them are masses, which are millions of solar masses. Remember, this is our own big core of our own galaxy. Some of these are stars. We start tracking, and we notice that these guys are all orbiting something. These are different positions. And they all seem to be orbiting, or this guy seems to be orbiting something that's right down here. The star is moving around this object, which is millions of solar masses, but we're seeing it only in the X-ray range. Looks like it added to me. This is what it looks like when they put it all into an animation and run the time forward. This is happening in our galactic core. Those are the years up there, and they're going to project it to the future in a second. So we're going to zoom in so you can actually see. We're looking at 10 light days across. You can see what's happening. This is what's happened to the stars. This is how they're moving. There's something there. Now, we can see we're projecting in the future, and it meets itself. So, this is the core of our own galaxy. We've got a supermassive black hole. More evidence. We're seeing microquasars releasing energy. So, again, we're looking at snippets of evidence. We're seeing things in the X-ray sources that we cannot explain in terms of normal stellar motion. Something is occurring. We're finding an interesting relationship between the dynamics and the mass of a black hole and this style of galaxy. Then we talked about this in one of the earlier lectures, that the structure of a galaxy determines symbiotically with the mass of a black hole. So all galaxies have black holes. In fact, the energy we're seeing from quasars are coming from black holes. Got animation here. What happens? Interesting models explained graphically. Frame dragging is another interesting. This is the frame dragging gravitational. This is the hottest topic now for astronomers. Right? They're building, and I've got a picture in a second of some incredible telescopes, special type telescopes being built to look for gravitational waves. I'll let you watch the full graph. Again, the frame dragging along with two wonderful accretion disks with black holes in the center, doing what black holes like to do, the black hole dance of death. Releasing these gravitational waves. So this is a consequence of general relativity. most countries are incorporating or building gravitational wave detectors. Now, we have two in Italy, Nautilus, and these ones in Italy are kind of trying time. They have the Riga and then the Nautilus. They both look identical, one's yellow, one's green, this one's opened up, so you can see this huge piece of metal that's looking to see if a gravitational wave will come through. Gravitational waves are polarized, just like LIGO. There's two types of gravitational waves. They're going to look for a specific signature, so that if it does come through, it should make the bar ring. And they're looking for this type of ringing in the bars. But I don't think it'll be very successful, but they're going to try. US has two of these LIGO detectors. Each one of these arms is about 4 kilometers long. And it's like the interferometer, right? You should know the interferometer, if you've read about that. Two perpendicular things crossing. And if a wave goes through, it will change the length of one of the paths, and it should show as an interference pattern on a computer screen that they're using to match this. They just got permission, and they're building a laser, which is the laser interferometer, which is called the LISA system, which is going to go up in about 2013. They've got permission to build this thing. It's going to be each of these detectors, each of these things that shoot out lasers, are going to be about 5 million kilometers apart. Why so far apart? Why so active? Gravitational waves will only distort something, one part, in 10 to the 21. Let's put that in reality. It's like me using my telescope measuring the distance to Saturn. And the distance to Saturn has to move close to me by one hydrogen atom and further back. That is the resolution that these things have to fall out. Okay? The Big Bang inflation theory? Remember we talked about that? This is also going to produce gravitational waves, but they're even going to be smaller, so they're going to be even beyond the capabilities of the LISA system. Right? But if somebody could detect gravitational waves that were corresponding to the wavelength of the inflationary, the Big Bang, and that component that we talked about, we would then have another verification of inflation.
Aren't they able to teach for gravitational waves and gamma radiators too?
But they can't detect, yeah, anything that's massive that moves. Black holes, colliding black holes, colliding neutron stars, gamma ray bursts, which we're not 100% perfectly sure what they really are. We're getting closer and closer. But anything that releases a lot of gravitational movement of mass will produce gravitational waves.
When a supernova very, very near us produces gravitational waves, the detectors are on?
Well, they won't. The dying problem is the detector will still be off. Right, but they don't know when the supernova is going to go supernova, right?
No, sometimes they will. I heard that it was a supernova very, very close to our galaxy.
Right. No, I've not heard them. So, we've got a whole array of telescopes, satellites, trying to figure out when supernovas go. We don't even know. They catch us by surprise all the time.
I know, but I heard that the detectors of gravitational waves that are two in the time are both turned off. So
I wouldn't see why they would even worry about it. It is so hard to turn these things on and get them correlated. They were having cars hundreds of miles away affecting them. So just turning it off and turning it back on is it. So I've not heard of that myself. All right, some strange predictions. Huge energy outbursts, maybe gamma ray bursts that we're talking about, right? Are going to be coming from here. This actually, some of the stuff that's just coming up in the last couple of months. Of imaging and of theories that kind of explain where these huge energy outbursts are coming from. So it produces these, maybe gamma ray bursts are part and parcel of black holes. We talked about wormholes. Here's my version of a wormhole. There we go. Down and up, save the day. Right? So rather than following the universe around this way, if you went through the singularity, the toroidal singularity, remember, just by a photon going through the wormhole, the classical wormhole, so you need, I call it exotic matter, so all ships should be coated in this exotic matter outer skin to make the wormhole big enough and not collapse on itself, right? And science fiction writers love it because you can go from point A to point B the minimal special effects.
What is a quasar?
Yeah, quasar is a early generation galaxy. That's what we, and that was up this. We thought quasars were stars in our own galaxy, so they're called quasi stellars. But they end up being further galaxies. We're looking back in time at what the early formation of galaxies look like. And there, that gives us a clue that it's a symbiosis, that these black holes were all involved in there, so the black holes and galaxy formulation happen together. Yes?
What is a white hole?
White hole is the other end of the black hole.
Have you ever found one?
Well, that's yesterday we were talking about trying to find things coming out of nowhere. They will come out of white hole. So no, we haven't found anything yet. Naked singularity, remember when I said the two horizons touch? This is what you get. You would actually have a black hole about to arrive. This way you could actually get closer and see what's happening. Some predictions have been coming out from the early Big Bang. You saw these little singularities popping out. But the rules are so chaotic, you could have things like I've got here. Somebody say, television sets, to bus, so Abraham Lincoln could come flying out of this singularity, right? The rules have really gone haywire. Time travel, again, flipping through the total thing. Remember I said time and space all play, all that little stuff? If you don't necessarily know where you're going to pop out, there's no guarantee you know when you're going to pop out. Take a spinning black hole, which is dragging stuff around. Build this device around it, so you make sure you have a small enough black hole. Build this device around it. Lower stuff into the spinning part, right? Not into the horizon, because you know if it goes in the horizon, ain't coming out. Into the spinning part, and you can actually pull out energy. So they have people who sit there and produce beautiful energy-deriving devices. Oh yeah, and the black holes would start to shrink. If you take away energy, it has to shrink. But if it's eating stuff, then it has to grow. So it probably be eating more stuff than it would be losing anyways. So when we talk about a black hole evaporating, that's assuming it's not eating anything else. And of course, this is where I have to be off, because this is where, from general relativistic perspectives, my singularity is a mathematical point. Quantum world is going to change this into something called quantum foam, and that would be like a transgressing hole of quantum foam, and that's some of the fun time travel and all this other stuff in multiple universes. Hopefully this is where some people are talking to you about in the next lecture. There we go. Suddenly, the force is not yet fully understood. Darren Dutsky's apartment became the center of a new black hole. And we'll end it there. There you go, guys.